this voice was saying, like, I was going to kill myself. I was intent on killing myself because I was the worst father in the world, and I was going to damage my child beyond repair. So the only act of love I could display was to kill myself. It total sense at the time. So there's this argument in my head, and I say to myself, and I recognize my voice, so I knew it was me. Okay, if you really are the worst father in the world, let's dig around and poke into that. Let's open that rucksack. All right, let me ask you this. Have you ever, trigger warning, raped your child? Well, I hadn't. You ever beaten your child? I hadn't. You ever deliberately harmed your child at all? I hadn't. Have you ever deliberately harmed any child? I hadn't. You know, so you're by definition then not the worst.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today's guest is Sheridan Taylor. Sheridan is a combat veteran, former corrections officer, and suicide survivor who advocates for mental health and addiction, aiming to reduce stigma and help those affected. He draws from personal experiences with mental health issues, medication dependence, and grief. Sheridan's life lessons from military service and personal struggles emphasize perseverance and the importance of fighting for a better life. He resides in Southern Alberta with his family and two dogs. Sheridan, I am so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah. I've read bits and pieces of your story. There's so many moving parts to it. I'm so excited to hear it from your own mouth. And so I'm going to pass over the mic to you for you to share with the audience.
Okay. So I was born at a very young age and then I got older. Let's just go right to the elephant in the room, the mental illness aspect of them and the recovery from it and the growth from that. So let's start where that started. It started in utero. We talk about intergenerational trauma up here in Canada with the First Nations, the what you call Native Americans, and how things went really bad for a real long time. Well, we don't talk about the fact that pretty much all families have intergenerational trauma of some kind, right? We know, for instance, American inner cities, what's happened with African Americans, right? And how that feeds on itself. We talk about criminality and all that, but we don't talk about what military service does to the follow-on generations. We talk about the good stuff that comes of that, right? The things we learn. We don't talk about the cost. So I'm a veteran, yes. My father's a veteran. His father's a veteran. His father's a veteran. My mother's father's a veteran. His brothers are veterans. His father, and so on. We're not really sure how far back it goes because at a certain point, no one's keeping track. But what we do know is we've all passed along our grandparents' pain to our children. My father did the best he could with the tools that he had, but he didn't know what he didn't know. Right. My mother was, again, did the best she could with what she had. But, you know, when your coping mechanism is alcohol, you're not doing great. And so I was swimming in cortisol in the womb. Right. Just a stressed out mother, emotionally unwell, stressed out father, emotionally unwell, alcohol dependence, military service, deployments. That level of stress on the mother transfers itself into the fetus. We know this to be true, and if that happens enough times over generations, it changes genetically upcoming generations. So I inherited all that, and then we are Indigenous, we are First Nations, so we got that going on too. So we're pouring slew water into the sewer, right? We're not getting great, right? So I was, through no fault of anyone anywhere, I was genetically programmed to do less than ideally under stressful circumstances, but yet to do my best to seek out stressful circumstances. I was told that at the age of 4, I decided my life path would be military and then law enforcement, because that's what we do, right? We seek the cortisol. And until very recently, and we're still not doing well, we never taught anything about emotional intelligence to children. So, you know, I learned, don't cry or you're weak. Don't be sad. Don't be lonely. Don't be anything other than John Wayne, which is impossible. Right? I was in my late 40s when I started therapy before I learned that an emotion is a physiological response in the body, no different than pain or hunger or fatigue. You can't not react to pain. If someone sticks you in the butt with a thumbtack, you're going to react to pain. If something outside your body makes you or sad circumstances, you're going to get sad. If you have no company around, you'll be lonely. I didn't learn that. All I learned was, if I feel what I'm feeling, I make the adults in my life angry at me. So there's something fundamentally wrong with me because I can't stop feeling what I'm feeling. And in fact, when they get angry at me, I feel more of it. So I'm fundamentally flawed as a human being. I'm not good enough. So that's how it starts, unfortunately, with far too many of our kids. And we have this idea that we take this idea that culturally, we took the wonderful, you know, teachings of the ancient Greek Stoics and warped them. We bent them and twisted them. The Stoics never said, don't feel emotions. They said, don't be ruled by emotions, right? Don't try to control them. Don't try to control your behavior, because you can't control an emotion. You can control how you behave. But we didn't, we took that and we twisted it around so we got to the point where, you know, cowboys don't cry. Big girls don't cry. Well, they do, or they go crazy. So I went crazy instead. I can fast forward through childhood, adolescence, military service. I don't blame my military service for my traumas. I worked really hard to get those traumas. I earned them, goddammit. But I was born into crazy, and I worked as hard as I could to make it worse. Two tours in Bosnia and two in Afghanistan. I don't blame my tours for my trauma. I was married for 20 years. We were together for 23. Our illnesses are unrecognized, our unknown illnesses. She was chronically depressed. I had no idea. She didn't know. I don't blame my military service. The tours and exercises, you know, being away for 200 days a year didn't kill her. They didn't help. But we reached a point, like when we first met, we were two very broken children, but the broken pieces, you know, fit together in such a way that we were pretty healthy whole for a long time. And then, don't know, one too many tours, just one too many miscarriages, one too many what's. Something chipped those broken pieces until they didn't fit anymore. And then you have these broken pieces of glass just rubbing each other and shattering. Her depression manifested as an eating disorder, and that killed her. It took 2 years to do it, but she managed to pull it off. And I, not having any of the tools one should have, had no idea what to do. I didn't make it better anyway. I made it worse constantly. And did the thing that a pattern I have, where push everyone away and tell myself they're leaving me. I don't deserve them because I'm not as good enough, right? Lesson from childhood. So push them away. So I would distance myself from her because I couldn't stand watching her die. But the one thing she needed, one thing we all need, is true, honest, open connection, right? That emotional, somatic level connection we all crave, when we crave oxygen. We both just cut that off from each other and therefore from ourselves. So she died. I don't blame the military for that. I don't blame anyone or anything for that. I wish it could be different, but it can't. I didn't react well to it. I would tell myself every day, you know, okay, get ready for it. This might be the day. You might wake up beside a corpse. You might come home to a corpse. Get ready. Be ready for this. Get ready. Contingency plans, right? Orders and coming up with contingency plans to contingency plans, right? Ready for all of it. I wasn't ready for any of it. No, she died in the room next to me. Just sat down and never got up again. Wasn't ready for it. Took a long, long, long time to even let myself really, truly experience the emotions that were happening. I was so accustomed to stopping them, right? Stopping them right about here to push them back down. But this was something I couldn't push anymore. Entered into another relationship with a wonderful woman. Eventually, we had a child. Well, she had a child. I didn't contribute a whole lot, honestly. And that was it. That was the last. I wasn't able to deal with that one. I wasn't able to deal with joy, right? And this idea that this human being is dependent completely and entirely on me. I wasn't ready for that kind of responsibility at that point. I just lost the plot completely. He was about 6 months old or so. You know, booties on the ground. And I decided that the best possible course of action to save him from becoming me and living in the hell that I lived in was to kill myself. It took a while to get to that point, to see the clarity, right? To understand the logic behind that. But I got there, you know. And on the day, right, the afternoon, I was going to go through with it. You know, working out the logistics, the last moment logistics, right? How am I going to, you know, who's going to find, like, you know, how do I, you know, minimize further damage, right? And the whole time there's this tiny voice in the back of my head. I don't know if you're old enough to remember, there was a television show with a sitcom character named Steve Urkel. Yeah, Steve Urkel's voice in the back of my head going, statistics show that, the children of suicide victims go on to commit suicide themselves in their earliest adolescence. You know, statistics show that children do much better in life if they have both parents in their life, even if one. And this just this long, just this whole thing going on, and I decided it made sense. It was annoying, and so instead I put down the implement of destruction. I picked up my cell phone. I called a therapist for help instead of. And that's how I began my journey to recovery. Then began years of taking one step forward and two steps back and trying to learn how to be okay with not always being okay. Learning how to allow emotions to work themselves through and process them. I've been taught in the military to always seek and accept responsibility, right? Leadership, yada, yada, all these wonderful things, right? Seek and accept responsibility. But I never learned from anybody except accountability. I never learned that you are fully responsible, not only for what you do, but for everything that's happening inside you, causing you to do what you do, right? I was really good at seeing myself as a victim, you know, something, somebody made me feel this way or something made me do this way or whatever. You know, that's very wrong, totally false. And it's completely opposite to the military ethos, right? Seek and accept responsibility. Your actions are your responsibility. Become, seek, achieve, all those stuff. I'd spent several years at that point refusing to do any of that. I was a victim. I was a victim of life. And then I'm working at trying to get through all this and deal with flashbacks and deal with anxiety attacks and deal with depressive episodes and trying to find some sort of level somewhere in there, anywhere. And I had a major epiphany, one might call it, standing in a maximum security institution, hearing doors go clang. And I'm standing there with my hand on one door and it keeps getting cycled, right? Click, click, click. And I'm just standing there, not going in, not going out. Because in my head, there's this whole conversation happening. I'm talking to myself in my head. And this time I'm actually listening to me, which is a rare thing because I know me well enough not to listen to me. But this voice was saying, like, I was going to kill myself. I was intent on killing myself because I was the worst father in the world. And I was going to damage my child beyond repair. So the only act of love I could display was to kill myself. It total sense at the time. So there's this argument in my head. And I say to myself, and I recognize my voice, so I knew it was me. Okay, if you really are the worst father in the world, let's dig around and poke into that. Let's open that rucksack. All right. Let me ask you this. Have you ever, trigger warning, raped your child? Well, I hadn't. You ever beaten your child? I hadn't. You ever deliberately harmed your child at all? I hadn't. Have you ever deliberately harmed any child? I hadn't. You know, so you're by definition then not the worst. Period. Just argue with that. Well, I couldn't argue with that. Okay. So if you're not the worst, are you still really bad? Let's check that out. Do you have a job? Yes. A job you hate with every fiber of your being? Yes. But you go every day because it feeds your kid? Yes. So that's not second worst father in the world. Does your kid have a roof over their head? Does your kid have clothes? Does your kid have yada, yada? And then it's a whole checklist. Okay, so I'm not the worst in the world. Not even like bottom, you know, 10%. I'm doing all right. Okay, so, all right, Taylor, listen, all right. Motherfucker, did you or did you not read 7 books on parenting back to back so you could learn how to be a dad? Yeah, I did that. Okay, well, dipshit, bad people are bad people because they don't care that they're bad people, right? Yeah. Okay, stay with me, genius. Good people care about being good people, so they do good things as hard as they can. They screw up once in a while, but they try to be good, yeah? Yeah. So a good dad is a dad who tries to be a good dad. So if you read a whole bunch of books and you try to do the best you can for your kid, then you are, come on. I'm a good dad. Yeah. Yeah. You have the makings of a really good dad in you. If you stop being an asshole to yourself and the world. So I just stand there with my hand on this door. I have no idea how long I was standing there for. I know I was late getting on shift because they were real mad at me. I don't know how late, because just my brain was just like expanding and contracting. It was like I was on some sort of psychedelic trip. It was like some sort of change in like the synaptic channels. This moment of, hey, you're not a horrible parent. You're not a horrible human. You're actually pretty good because you try as hard as you can to be as good as you can. Sometimes you screw up. Sometimes you do really shitty things because you're human. And that's why you feel shitty about yourself, because you've done shitty things and didn't do anything about that. Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, what do you want to do about that? Right? Yeah, just as, so then from there, it's all about learning, taking on new tools, right? Parenting, right? Parenting is leadership. I had to learn that lesson. No one told me that. It's so simple, right? If everybody in every military everywhere was just told, hey, all the leadership things we're teaching you right now, apply them to your kids and you'd be good. Because leadership is modeling the behavior you want your subordinates to exhibit. Right. Well, your kids don't do what you tell them. They do what you show them. Your kids become who you are. So if you don't like who you are, that's something you got to fix, because they're going to be you. So, yeah. Leadership, parenting. Oh, let's make that connection. So then it was about, okay, if you don't fix your shit, your kids can be just like you, just like you're just like your dad, and him just like him, and him, and on and on. Okay, so yeah, I would walk around. My son's name is Trace. And so I would walk around this in my head. What would grown-up Trace do? WWGUTD, right? So situations would come up, and instead of, I had to learn to catch thoughts catch patterns, catch behaviors, monitor feelings. And that took a long time. But I had to learn, instead of just a knee-jerk reaction, which usually involved violence, that's who I was. I had to learn to pause for a second, take a breath, right? It's like they said in kindergarten, count to 10. Take a deep breath and count to 10. Well, I started doing that at 47 years old. Sorry, just caught on a little late. And so I have to, what would I want my son to do if he were grown up and in my shoes right now? And quite often it was exactly the opposite of what I wanted to do, but that's what I would try to do. And I would try to catch these negative thought patterns, these self-destructive thought patterns. And that was really difficult because it would just come around in different angles, flanking attacks, maneuvers, and just air assaults. Like, just, I ended up, same thought patterns that would always take me down the same synaptic channels, and always ended up in a rage, not anger. Anger is actually a useful emotion. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Anger is actually useful. It's the difference between a bullet and a grenade, right? You aim, you use the sights and aim, then you fire off one round and it does what you want it to do. That's anger. Anger is something's wrong and I got to fix it. It's pissing me off, right? One well-aimed shot. Rage is a fucking grenade with a pin pulled. It just blows up and doesn't care who it hurts. So I had to learn the difference between rage and anger and stop letting rage happen. Just keep that pin in. I learned all the emotions. I don't identify them. I had to recognize, what am I feeling right now? Because they were all rage. Something wonderful would happen. And because I was so unaccustomed to allowing any emotion out, it would immediately transform into rage. Here's a bizarre example. My wife's grandparents and her parents were at our house for a Christmas celebration. And I was stomping around the house in my usual tantrum. Happy, right? Just rage and childishly stomping around. But I'm 220 pounds. I'm a 6 foot, 220 pound child, toddler having a tantrum. That's terrifying, right? I'm also covered in, you know, overcompensating tough guy tattoos. I work as hard as I can to be scary as I can. So they want all the males, my little baby boy, me, her father, her dad, and her grandfather on the stairwell, take a picture. And I see the picture of it. And I'm homicidal looking. Like, the sheer fury is exploding out of my face because someone's asked me to take a picture. That's like the pit. That is the picture of insanity. Like, if I could take that picture and just show the world, this is what crazy looks like. Don't go here. But I did. But it was all about learning and failing, because that's how you learn, right? My soccer coach was right. Hockey coach was right. You know, you got to fall down so you can learn to skate. And I fell down a lot. At one point, I went back to drinking. I'm an alcoholic. I was dry, a dry drunk, as we call it, for 20 years. And then, I don't know, I just picked up a beer and three of those, we'll call them slips because they were one-time events. It wasn't a relapse where I went back on the sauce for weeks at a time. It's one night and then wake up and go, what the fuck was that? Why? Well, because you haven't dealt with all your shit yet, son. You haven't looked at everything yet. You haven't gone back and dealt with all the pain that you're supposed to feel, that everyone is supposed to feel. It's okay to hurt. It's a requirement. Right? I had to learn that little story, that little lesson. Grief was a bitch. It's a motherfucker, right? But it has to be, because everything has, right? Everything has balance. So the harder you love, when that relationship goes away, the harder it's going to hurt. So you got two choices. Don't love, which I've been there, and that sucks. That's awful. Or take the hurt when it comes. as a gift, because it can be. I learned that lesson. Pain can be a real gift. It's a shitty gift sometimes. But sometimes it's the most precious gift you can get. I didn't know how deeply you can truly love until it was gone. So when it came back, I'm going to cry a little bit, and that's okay. When it came back, it changed everything. Because I had a son. I had a wife and a son. And they propelled me to becoming a man I didn't know could exist. If I had gone through the pain, I would never have learned the lessons that I learned. I wouldn't have become the man I've become. I wouldn't know what true joy feels like. I wouldn't know what calm is like. I've never experienced calm until I was like 49. Where I was like, just everything's just kind of okay. Just this moment where, you know what? Everything's kind of just okay. You know? Dog just pooped on the floor. I was eating it, getting sick. That's awful. But it's okay. You know, kids over here beating one another up, and everything was just sheer chaos everywhere. And then, but instead of my usual like table flipping tantrum, I just sat there going, yeah, this is moderately awful, but it's okay. This is what happens. This is life. I would never have been able to achieve that if I hadn't gone through the ups and downs, the dramatic ups and downs, if I'd gone to the pits of hell. And if I hadn't experienced the pain I've experienced and learned to recover from it the way I have, I wouldn't be able to help the people I've helped who are where I was. And I've done enough of that to varying degrees of success, depending on how crazy it was at the time, that someone kept saying, you should write a book. And I kept saying, go fuck yourself. Which was the most people all the time anyway. Like, you know, it's just for a long time, I wasn't a very nice man. Cause I hated me, but I punished the world for that. Does that make sense? But yeah, one day I didn't so much as write the book, if you know what I mean, as just like smash it together. I've been writing like social media posts, just trying to reduce stigma for the younger officers in corrections that are coming up behind me that I taught all the wrong lessons to. And I'm trying to teach them that it's okay to have emotions, right? So, but they got to deal with the dinosaurs like me, right? If you were meant to have emotions, they'd be issued to you. Suck it up. Airborne. Hurrah, right? All the tough guy things. That was me. Have you seen my tattoos? Right? So I was putting these social media posts up, documenting my struggles and journey for everyone to see, basically, but just to take a little bit of stigma away. And because I'm in this spot where, you know, I've got shiny things I can wear on my chest when I want to, right? I've got the reputation. I can, you know, I'll throw hands with anybody, anywhere, anytime, right? Right? Super tough guy. So when the super tough guy comes out and says, hey, things are really shitty for me and I'm crying a lot, that's a different message, right? That's, you know, when just like, if it was like, I don't know, it opened up things for people, gave space for them to be able to just say, yeah, I'm not okay either right now. So that was cool. And then I was also having these like writing letters and emails, actual letters, because I'm that old, and emails to people that were struggling and reaching out to me. So I was giving them the advice that I was learning from the psychologist I was getting therapy from. And I was writing these emails to my children for them to read when they're old enough, right? They have email accounts that we'll give them access to when they're old enough to understand. And it was just like a little piece of advice how to not end up like I did. And yeah, I just kind of smashed them all together, and it's just this one steady stream, and they're all interconnected. The technical term is interleaved. My book is interleaved. I'm never going to retire off. I'm never going to make any money off it at all. There's no money in nonfiction unless you're, you know, Tony Robbins or David Goggins, I guess. They make money off. I don't. But my wife and I agreed that no matter what it ended up costing us, if we know, if we find out for sure that we have definitely helped one person, if we have changed one life for the better, if we have made one family better, it's worth everything. The time, the money, it's worth all of it. Well, I have over 200 messages from people saying that my book is mission accomplished. That's why I wrote the book. And that's why I reached out to you to get on your podcast to let people know this book exists. It's just, it's a way to help the world get out of where we are and get to where we really belong. We've created this society that's, we deserve better. Our kids deserve better. All this divisiveness and hate over nothing. And it's, that's mental illness. Like if you look at what mental illness does, like, I'm not just saying for me, but I will use me. It causes us to withdraw, isolate, and say that everyone's leaving us, right? Because the cure to most mental illness is just connection. It's true, simple, honest, open connection, a thing that we're not very good at anymore. We get all this shit get in the way, but it's like, I use the analogy of like the tough guy drill sergeant, right? The guy that's been deeply traumatized by his service and the culture that he was raised in where, you know, you want to cry? Cry about that, right? Here's something to cry about, kid, right? You know, the suck it up, muffin. Welcome to the fucking war. Welcome to the army, right? Or the Navy or whatever service you're in, right? That guy. So if we look at it, we have our young troopy or sailor or airman or marine or whatever, officer, has something really big happen. It may not be necessarily good. It may not necessarily be bad, right? You can't really say a firefighter is good or bad. It's just happening, right? But afterwards, and that event itself doesn't necessarily mean that anybody involved in it is traumatized. It's just an event that happened. And it triggered a bunch of emotions inside everybody all at the same time. Fear, probably the biggest one, which we don't like to talk about, but we need to. So if young troopy turns to gruff old Sarge and says, "Holy shit, Sarge, I was really scared." And Sarge goes, "You fucking coward." Well, now the troopy is traumatized because now he's received negative social response to a genuinely, actually unnecessary emotion. The body responded to external stimulus. There were physiological changes, tunnel vision, loss of fine motor skills, racing heart, sweating, right? All kinds of things happened because that's how we know we're scared. Our body says, "Hey, you're scared." It's like it says, "Hey, you're hungry." So Troopy couldn't help but feel what he felt, or she felt. And if Sarge had just turned around and said, "Yeah, you should have been scared. That was really scary. We're trying to kill you. I was scared too. I'm not going to admit that to anybody else but you, but I was scared too, because that was scary. And it's okay to be scared. Now, get the fuck back on the line." Boom, Troopy's fine. That's it. That's all we needed was positive social feedback to a physiological response in his body to external stimulus. That's all an emotion is. I learned this. It's just synaptic channels opening and closing. It's just neurochemicals cascading down my spine. Shout out to Kevin Lutz about that one, right? Neurochemicals down my spine, hormones releasing. That's all an emotion is. Positive, negative, whatever you want to call it. That's all it is. It's a physiological response. I had to learn all that. And then I had to try to teach that so people can understand and be okay with it. If we could all just do that, because you ever notice when something big happens, positive or negative, something big happens, everybody there, the first thing they do, everybody is look around, make eye contact with everybody else. Are you seeing what I'm seeing? Are you feeling what I'm feeling? Are you scared? I'm scared. You're scared? Good. You're scared? Okay, good. You're not scared. Why aren't you scared? Am I something wrong with me? No, because they're scared and I'm scared. So we're okay. You're weird. All right, good. Okay, cool. Now we can move. I need you and your social feedback and your emotional responses to validate mine for me to be okay. I'm probably at a point where I'm just okay with having them in me and realize that you're going to have yours. I'll have mine. You do you, I'll do me. We'll get together for coffee after. Cool. Right? So if we could all just learn to do that and accept that we need one another to deal with our own shit and each other's, a lot of that shit would just go away. But we don't. We teach the opposite, right? But it's all nonsense. Even, right? Even if we look at, I like picking on poor John Wayne because he was my hero for the longest time, right? But if you look at we epitomize him as the rugged individual, right? But he wasn't. Name one movie where he didn't have a team backing him up. You know, even in the Cowboys, his team was a bunch of, you know, prepubescent children. But he had a team, right? Never alone. We're never alone. We can't be alone. We can't. We don't function alone. We are a mammalian group species, right? And when we start to withdraw and isolate and pull back and try to become a lone individual, rugged or not, shit goes real fucking bad, real fucking fast, right? So that whole idea there, I had to learn that connection is the cure to everything. Right? I ran away from connection with my children. I was so deep into withdrawal and isolation that I remember a particular moment where my little boy was probably about 1 year old, and his grandma was holding him as I was getting ready to go to work, and he reached out. He wanted daddy to hold him, and I couldn't lift my arms. My brain was screaming, "Hug your baby." And I was so scared of connection, I wouldn't hug my baby. That's messed up. Now I hug the shit of that kid. Yeah. I swore I would never pass it on, but I did. I did. It's a thing that we do. We pass it's PTSD is a disease that we pass on. We inherit our grandparents' pain and pass it on to our children. Well, I am very proud to say for the first time to anybody anywhere that my son had this anxiety tick where he would scratch so hard he'd make himself bleed. It's a common thing with ADHD, anxiety, PTSD, all of which he has or had, sure anymore, because this morning, not only were there no fresh wounds, there were no scabs. The scabs are gone. He's okay. And he's okay because I did the fucking work. He did his work. Yeah, my kid is a therapist. Goddamn right, my kid is a therapist. My kid learned the shit I didn't learn. His little brother, no sign of any trauma at all. Untouched. He's just your normal four-year-old sociopath. As every four-year-old should be. It's a little more metal than most, but, you know, it's... Sorry, world. Yeah, his favorite band is, I don't know if you're familiar with metal, but his favorite band is a Mongolian heavy metal band called The Who. If you haven't heard The Who, audience, it's spelled H-U. Look up Wolf Totem. It's amazing. But my little boy doesn't, his therapist said, we'll keep him, the relationship open. We'll still keep coming once a month. Insurance covers it. But she said, it's just there. So he has an outlet if he needs it, but he doesn't need a therapist anymore. He's fixed himself, and he's 7. My 7-year-old son is braver and stronger than most adults I know, because he faced the work and did it. And me and my wife did our work separately, together, relationship work, individual work, group work individually. I did my group work over there. She did her group work over there. Came together for group work, individual work, come together for couples work, 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 motherfucker, work. People have this idea that therapy is about, I go talk to that person and they fix me. No, that's not how it works. You got to work. You think you're tough? Prove it. Prove it to me. Turn around and face the things that you're trying to run from, the ones in your head. Face them. Because there's a secret, man. Your demons are bullies, and bullies, like any, if you just turn around and punch it in the fucking snout, it goes away. The more, your demons cannot beat you. They couldn't beat me. They can't beat you. They can only try to persuade you to quit. Are you struggling? Good. It means you're winning, motherfucker. You're winning. You lose when you quit. You're struggling? You should be struggling. Life can suck, man. But your demons cannot beat you. They can only try to get you to quit. And if you don't quit, they cannot win. And stop fighting so hard and learn to fight smart. There's tools out there, man. There's people that know shit that you don't know. Find them. Listen to them. Do the things they tell you to do. What do you call them again? Oh yeah, psychologists. They know stuff. That's why they had like letters referring after their name. Yeah, talk to some of them. Not all, some are stupid. We all are. Get me. I am a genius. Just ask me, I'll tell you. But I had to learn. I had to learn. I learned so much. And now I'm just trying to get the rest of the world to not learn it, because we know it at our core, right? You know when someone's hurting that what they really need is a hug and a cry, right? Doesn't matter how tough they are or think they are or try to pretend they are. Someone's hurting, they need a hug and a cry. But we don't let ourselves do that. It's such bullshit. Okay. Here's the thing. Tough guys, tough gals. Nervous system is divided up into two, right? There's the autonomic nervous system, right? That's what our body just does, instant stuff, right? So I'm sure you're familiar with the sympathetic nervous system, SNS activation. That's fight or flight response, right? That's tunnel vision, auditory exclusion, dry mouth, sweats, loss of motor skills, racing heartbeat, all the stuff and the things that we know we're scared or angry and we need to fight or run, right? The other side of that is the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's the system that kicks in when the moment of fight or flight is no longer required, right? The moment's over. We don't need to run or fight anymore. Now we need to slow the fuck down and just chill, right? PNS. You can activate that with diaphragmatic breathing. We called it combat breathing in the army and tactical breathing in corrections. It's fucking box breathing, diaphragmatic breathing, right? Four in. Hold four, out four, hold four, right? We've all done it. We all know it, right? There's different variations and models. I do better at four, six, four, six, whatever. But, and you can activate your vagus nerve, especially in your eyelids a little bit. Have a drink of water and a cookie, get the digestion working, because when digestion kicks in, SNS stops, because your body goes, well, if we're eating, we're safe now, so we can stop freaking out. Cookie, yummy. Well, the fastest and most effective way to activate parasympathetic nervous system is to cry your guts out. Cowboys don't cry. They'd better start. Big girls don't cry. They'd better start. Because crying is how your body resets itself to zero. But we don't teach that. We teach the opposite. Crying is weakness. It's not weakness, it's necessary. We have all these myths, and it's making us sicker and sicker all the time. And it's dividing us when we should be coming together. We are a group species. That's why when you pick up your baby, you just feel good for a minute or two, right? Or when somebody holds your hand, or you have that hug for 8 seconds or more, just everything feels okay for a moment. That's because your body's releasing oxytocin and dopamine and other feel-good hormones. Because we're supposed to connect physically and emotionally, because emotions are physical sensations inside the body. All this stuff that we should have learned in kindergarten and no one taught us. And it's why we're all struggling as hard as like we should struggle. Life is a struggle, but not this fucking much all the time. And we're doing our children a disservice by passing those myths on. And making it worse, we're creating safe spaces for children so they don't have to feel emotions. That's not going to help them. They need to have some suck in their life, or they're just not going to know what to do when it happens, because life will fuck you up every chance it gets. Right? You're not going to be okay all the time, and expecting that is unrealistic. And so when things go not okay, if it should be shitty, if the shitometer should be halfway up, you don't know how to deal with it. The shitometer goes all the way over to the red. We gotta stop doing that shit.
Yeah.
It starts with you and me, right? Like,
Agreed. Absolutely. Well, Sheridan, you talk about your kids, and for me it hits a soft spot because I have a daughter. She's 18 months old, and there's so much shit that I think as a parent you have to face from your own past just in parenting alone. I don't think there's anything else in my life that's brought up more of my traumas than being a parent. And there's always that like fear in the back of my head of, I don't want my daughter to have to deal with what I went through, and catching myself in those moments where maybe I'm a little more triggered or upset or something, you know, and trying to figure out like, how the hell do I deal with this so that she has the tools to not have to be that way. And so I wanted to commend you for doing the work and for making therapy destigmatized for your child, especially having a son, because I think when we talk about the male population in general, there is a separate stigma where, you know, you talked about this several times, like not crying, not showing emotion, being tough, that has been ingrained in men for centuries. And so to give your boys the tools where you show them, hey, it's okay to cry. Hey, it's okay to talk to a therapist. That's incredible. And man, like to be able to watch your child heal before your own eyes. I mean, that's so beautiful. And I think at the younger ages are the best times to give kids those tools because their brains are still so plastic and soaking in everything. And that will be ingrained in both your boys for the rest of their lives now. And so that's absolutely incredible. And I'm so grateful that you shared that with the audience. And I hope everyone else is impacted as much as I was hearing that, because that is beautiful. You talked about the positive feedback thing. And I wanted to reiterate this point and touch on it again, because I think that is one of those missing pieces that when we talk about mental health in the culture, I really push for a change of culture in the military, veteran populations. And a lot of people, I think, in leadership don't really know where to start. And I'm always like, hey, just be human, you know, don't make it weird when someone's like, hey, you know, I'm not having a great day, or, you know, but when you ask someone, how are you today? And they just say, good, you know, go a little bit deeper if you have the time to do it. But I think when you talk about this piece about positive feedback, it's so key. Because there's so many times, whether someone is going to a medical appointment or they're just talking to a leader or they just want to feel validated. I think there's so many instances that I have seen in and outside of the military where people are invalidated. And you're right. People just want validation. They just want to be heard. And I think on the receiving end, you don't have to have the answers. And I think a lot of us feel like we have to have that right answer. We have to have a solution. You don't. It's usually just that person just wants to be validated. They just want someone to hear them and acknowledge them. And then sometimes an answer is as simple as, oh, you felt fear, like that's horrible. You know, or I can't relate to that, but I can't imagine how that would feel. And just offering support. I mean, it can be that simple. And so I appreciate that you brought that up, because I think that's one of those missing pieces to the puzzle. The other piece that you talked about, and it kind of encompasses your entire story, as you really shared how the domino pieces fall when it comes to trauma. Because I think another thing that the higher ups in leadership positions in our militaries and across the globe try to figure out is, well, how do we fix this mental health problem? You know, what check can we put in the box to just fix everything and make it go away? And I truly believe that a lot of people, if not most people, join the military already traumatized to some point. That why else would we join the military, right? I mean, there's not, it's not a glamorous lifestyle by any means. But understanding and recognizing that these traumas, they just compound and compound and compound until some point we look them in the face and face them. And then understand that it's not just, you know, you go to the therapist and then it just goes away. It's an ongoing process. And so offering that support and understanding that this came from beyond prior to service, and it's going to continue on after service. And it's just, how long are we going to wait till we start dealing with these things? And some people push it off till they're in their 70s. I mean, some people push it off their entire life. Let's be honest here. Yeah. There are people
never recover.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where we get into that generational trauma and passing it on. And in unintentionally, I think a lot of times, now, my own mom went through a lot of trauma in her childhood, and her mom went through trauma, and I'm sure there's generations before that. And I think there's a lot of healing in recognizing that, like, hey, there's a chunk of me that is traumatized. That's not my fault. And my daughter, I'm sure, will be the same way. There's going to be a chunk of her that has things that aren't necessarily her fault. And the more we do the work, the more we can heal these generations and finally give the generations down the road the tools to be able to successfully handle these things. And it's really incredible how you laid that out. So I wanted to thank you for that, because it sometimes hearing it in different perspectives and understanding that it's okay to be a little fucked up. It's okay. We're human. It's just naturally who we are, right?
You're supposed to be.
And so we're in this world right now where you're right. Like, people are trying to just cover it up. Don't feel. How can we get you to the point where you're quote unquote okay, because you're not feeling these emotions anymore, and that's not how we fix it. So that's just, wow, what an incredible story you have. And I'm so grateful that you came on here. I know you said your intention was to share your book, but I think you've shared so much value beyond your book. I am definitely going to grab a copy of your book, because I'm very excited to read what you have to put out there, because you've been through so much, and I want to acknowledge you for the work that you've done, because wow, what an incredible life you've lived. And man, you have so much further to go and so much more impact to give the world. Wow.
What happens now? Yeah, I left corrections. I've decided I will no longer be a weapon. Now what am I going to do? Where can I go from here?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So are you just at a point right now where you're just figuring it out, or what's next for you?
Right now, I don't know. I generally don't. I'm at a place right now financially where we're okay. We're not getting rich, right? But everyone's okay, right? And like, my little boy asked me one time, Daddy, what's rich mean? And I said, without thinking, I said, it means having food every day. Because I didn't.
Yeah.
Right? Or at least didn't have like what he has, or you know what I mean? Like, or and there are kids that just don't. So
yeah.
Like we're rich. So what's next for me? I don't know. Part of me wants to just chase this down and do speaking engagements. People are pushing me to go to speaking engagements, which is, this is really hard for me. I'm a deeply introverted person. So just coming on here, like, you can't tell I wore this shirt because you can't see the fear sweat. So I've done a couple of speaking engagements, and yeah, I come off of the stage. But every single time somebody comes up crying and says, thank you, because I was going to kill myself, and now I have hope. And that's it, man. You know, they felt a connection in our stories. They felt the connection to me, and they felt hope. And if you have hope, you're no longer suicidal. When I realized that I'm not a monster, I'm not wrecking my kid, I was hopeful that I could turn things around. So the thought of suicide never came back, because I had hope. So yeah, I don't know what's next for me, honestly. I'm just enjoying the ride for the moment. The past 2 years have been a focus just on really working on healing me, healing the family, helping us all heal ourselves. Now mission accomplished. Now what? Like, we did it. That's we incredible. Fucking did it.
That's incredible.
You know, my fucking fire team is my wife and two little boys and our dog, and we fucking did it.
That's incredible. Well, you know, I'm excited for you to do more speaking engagements, hopefully, because I think that your story is incredibly impactful. And sometimes it is just facing those fears that, you know, we're like, this is scaring the shit out of me. But knowing that it makes an impact, I'm such a big advocate of impact. And I think stories are one of the greatest ways to impact other people's lives, because there's always one person out there that can relate and they think they're alone. Until they hear that one story and they're like, oh, well, they went through this too. And they got past this. Maybe I can get past it too. And so where can we find you, Sheridan? Where can we support your book? Where can we support you and follow what you're doing?
So the book is apparently, it's on Amazon. I know that. I guess it's on a whole bunch of other internet platforms. I stay off the internet as much as I can. I'm not good at it. It's on Amazon for sure. It's in some books of Barnes and Noble, apparently. I didn't know that.
Fancy.
Right? Look at me go. And a friend of mine made me a website. It's SheridanTaylor.ca, not .com, but .ca. You can order it through there too. And I've got ramblings up there that share my, we can call it wisdom. I don't know, but I just share little bits of my story, you know, probably like once or twice a week. I just put little bits up there. Yeah, you can find me on there. Reach out to me through that. If you're struggling, if you need help, I might know something about somebody somewhere.
Awesome. You know, I truly believe the more that we connect and share value and share networks, there someone out there can connect someone with someone. And if I don't have the answer, if you don't have the answer, we might know someone who might know someone who has the answer. The answer is always out there. So I thought your website looked very nice, by the way.
Oh, I'll tell Amanda.
Very well done. You can pass that on. Last question for you, Sheridan. Are there any last words or pieces of advice that you want to leave the audience with today?
Yeah, I don't give a shit how alone you think you are. You are not alone. You are not alone. Someone somewhere cares about you so much they'll die. Do not quit. Reach out. Someone is there.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.